Okay. How's everyone? Everyone? All right. Okay. I feel very uncomfortable lecturing. I prefer to sit at a table and kind of go stream of consciousness. That way I wouldn't go neither here nor there. So I wrote what I'm going to say, and I'm going to read it. If it sounds like a lecture, I would have failed. I'd say, you tell me, stop. If it touches your heart, just one person, I'll be grateful to God. That's the spirit in which I'm going to do this, and I hope God will assist me in this. Okay. The scripture is, this day I call the heaven and the earth as witness against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and curses. Now choose life, so that you and your children may live, and that you may love the Lord your God, listen to his voice, and hold fast to him. For the Lord is your life, and he will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'm shouting because I've been instructed to project. So don't take it like, no, don't take it as an insult. It's not meant to be. But I'm hard of hearing, so therefore I do that. What a strange instruction, choose life. Isn't it obvious that people would rather live than die? Otherwise, what would be the point of medical science and hospitals if people, no. Unless perhaps you talk to suicidal people or suicidal communities. God was talking to Israel as a community. Are we people suicidal? What if we look at the historical record of humans on the planet over the centuries? In the last 5,000 years, beginning with the era of the cities and civilizations, the year when people started agriculture, we have been massacring one another for any and all reasons, inventing along the way the most effective means of extermination. In these endeavors, we have shown the most brilliant ingenuity. Think of the exterminating power of a nuclear bomb. No animal species can brag about that level of efficiency. No wonder the Bible places a fratricide at the beginning of its symbolic account of ancestral history. That this aggressive manner of treating our fellow humans is not a demonstration of choosing life should be obvious. So the instruction makes eminent sense today, after all. It sounds strange, but it's really poignant. It's equally obvious is the fact that ignoring this instruction is no light matter. The word says, I've set before you life and death. And it's not kidding. Remember Jesus saying, if one lives by the sword, one perishes by the sword. This is a hard saying to our belligerent hearts and minds in our belligerent world. No joke. When will they ever learn, as the song goes? You remember that? When will they ever learn? Yeah. This word is not a pious, moralistic piece of advice. Of course, we can dismiss it as such. Preacher, you know, then, you know, yeah. Pass the biscuits. But if we truly hear this word in the depth of our heart, as spoken from the depth of God's Spirit, we will know and experience it as a creative word, shaking the foundations of the old warlike mind and world, and ushering forth a new humanity. Choose life. This divine summons comes to us inhabitants of the planet Earth at a critical moment in which we seem to be stuck in a suicidal spiral, a time of great challenge and hence a time of great opportunity. These are the major features of our crisis. And please don't get bored now, but I'm gonna rattle some little facts, but put up with me. First, with great ingenuity, we have set up an enormous cultural apparatus whose purpose is to channel. I bored him. Whose purpose is to channel human aspirations and desires into needs and activities that require an increasing flow of material products. Most of these products are superfluous, satisfying the need to keep up with fashion or the need to replace old models purposefully engineered not to last. Some products are not only superfluous, but are deadly, like weapons. Second, this hypergrowth of production, remember, it starts with desire, okay? With the management of desires. By the way, the famous anthropologist, René Girard, this is not in the text, René Girard, said that we human don't know what we want, but we want what the other person wants. Put two kids in a room with 20 toys. One kid goes to one toy, and guess what? The other kid, what will he want? Exactly the same toy, okay? So, and the people who manipulate us know this. So that our desires are channeled. So we set up this conveyor belt, this treadmill, working like crazy all day for things that you really may or may not need. And this is a part of it. This hypergrowth of production requires a heavier use of energy resources, both renewable and from fossil fuels, the latter becoming increasingly scarce. Third, the amount of waste products from these activities is becoming difficult to manage, challenging the capacity of the environment to absorb it. The quantity of toxic pollutants spewed out into the natural environment is beginning to impact the air, the water, the earth, and food. Toxic nuclear waste will remain active for millennia. Fourth, the global warming resulting from the above excesses cannot reach beyond a certain level without bringing about a mass extinction of life on the Earth. Already it is disrupting weather patterns, has increased the power of hurricanes and the frequency of fires. To all that care to look at it, stare at it, this situation is unsustainable. It screams for a new humanity and a radical societal change. The word is now speaking loudly, even through the news reports. Choose life. A range of technical solutions are being discussed. Expert talks about a feasible society with an economy one-fourth to one-third of the present size, one-fourth to one-third, and about one-half of the current use of energy, obtained from a mixture of fossil fuel and renewable sources. That is a monumental enterprise. But the human variable, human attitudes and behaviors, remains the least predictable and the more incendiary factor, and therefore the crucial factor determining whether the realization of this necessary transition can occur without tragedy. Given our past historical record, the odds are not good. But the divine mercy can beat all odds. That is why a radical transformation of the human heart, a new creation, is called for. What is the gospel? Paul says, a new creation. Circumcision or uncircumcision doesn't count, but a new creation. A new creation. A new humanity that can heed to the call, choose life. Will we humans close our eyes and ignore the mounting evidence and refuse individually and collectively to make the required changes in our lifestyle and social organization? Will we close up in denial or in the fancy of imaginary technological fixes? Will change be imposed by force and coercion and bloodshed? Will an impoverished majority be sacrificed to the support of a plutocratic elite? Will we be able to avoid panic? If not, how will we act when the panic button begins to flash? We may be in for a rough ride, barring a radical conversion of the heart. This is where the instruction of the living word takes on a new depth. When in the course of the birth pangs of the coming age, we may be presented with instances of inevitable, unjust, and seemingly senseless suffering, will we still say yes to life? Will we choose life, or will we slump and recoil and surrender to the sound of other voices, voices of desolation and despair? Old age, now I'm shifting here. I see this a parable of old age and dying, because because that's a thought, you know. I'm 82 years old. I mean, the thought is there. Old age is also, in some sense, a time of transition, a time of crisis, like the ecological crisis, a turning of the ages. Yes, it's a turning of the ages, in some sense. We are confronted with a foreboding event, which can be looked upon as a blessing or as a curse, as a threat or as a challenge. Which will I choose? I am not distressed at the thought of dying as the cessation of my biological process, whether it be painful or otherwise. I'm not worried about that. But what kills me, or does it count somehow? What concerns me is the meaning of my life story. Does it count somehow? Or is it just striving after the wind? A tale told by a madman full of sound and fury and signifying nothing. All the beauty that I've seen, the thoughts that I've had, is this just smoke? That's really the question. And if my life has no meaning, if my own personal life has no meaning, how about the life on this planet? How about the history of humanity? How about God? If all that makes no sense, neither does my life. Here too, I am confronting the foreboding fact of my death. At this point, the word reminds me, and what does it say? choose life. Choose life. In that context, what does it mean to choose life? A hint is given in the following verse, verse 20, in which we read, "For the Lord is your life." The Lord is your life. What is the divine spirit telling me here? It says, you are not the isolated identity that you take yourself to be. By the way, physical science, modern physical science tell us so. We are all connected, you and I, we are all connected physically. Wow. But we are still stuck with Newtonian physics. But anyway, that's another, not part of this sermon. You're not the isolated identity that you take yourself to be. The warring, bellicose, defensive, competitive identity at war with yourself and others, keeping distance and fearing closeness. Don't want people to come close. Unconsolably lonely, desperate for recognition and approval, never satisfied, consumed with anxiety, frustration and rage, hiding your frailty and fear under a variety of disguises and defenses. I'm tough, I can tell you. You're not that thing. You are not that thing. You're not that. That part of you is destined to die. Good riddance. This is good news. This is that part of you is, you know, that part of you needs a lot of compassion. That part of you is God feels sorry for you because it makes you so miserable. Rejoice at this good news. What use do you have for that narcissistic, paranoid, obsessive, controlling, schizoid character disturbing your joy and your peace? Let it go. When it raises up its head and starts ranting in you, know that it is doomed. The Lord is your life. It says, I am your life. It speaks to your heart. There is the voice deeper, buried under that world-generated garbage. Deeper under the garbage, there is that other voice that says, I am your new and true humanity. I am your life. God is your life. Your spirit is connected to my spirit as through a spiritual umbilical cord. I am creating you anew with the very word I'm speaking to you. The word that you hear is creating you. I want to partner with you in the work of remaking you in my image. I want to partner with you in the work of remaking you in my image, the person that you are and are meant to be. I want you to experience the joy, the freedom, the exhilaration as you engage with me in this work of new creation. I will remake you into a connected being, a being capable of relating, open to all, receiving from all, giving to all. I'm with you in your daily struggle against the whisperings of the power of death. I'm molding you into a child and a partner, giving you new eyes, new ears, and a new heart. I am the same life-giving spirit at work in your human neighbors on this planet, preparing them for what is to come. They are also united to me and to you in my life, love and my life. I am a sea of consolation that embraces all life, I'm asking you to respond to me in faith. Trust me, choose me, love me, whatever befalls, choose life. Faith will become the shape of your inner life, the way we see and experience the world. Faith decides to believe that beyond the threshold of death, there is fullness of life and consciousness, the same consciousness that has conceived us and gives us life moment by moment. And if such a one has brought us so far, we can face the future without fear. Strengthened by the divine word, we can stand and stare death in the face and say, because the Lord is my life, I have decided now and will decide daily from this day forward to look upon you, death, not as a prison, but as a door out of prison into the light. I will look upon you, death, not as a burial grave, but as a birth canal flaming with purifying fire. I will look upon you, death, not as a hole in the abyss of oblivion, but as the opening to a living spring of pure water. Okay. This may be poetry, rhetoric, if you take it that way, or imagination, or you're free. The guy up there is deluding himself. Yeah, fine, good. But you have to choose, and the choice is going to have consequences. It's going to have consequences. I guess I'm not going to comment on the Hebrews part because I see you're tired. Your eyes begin to, So I'll stop here.